It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, I'll talk with playwright, actress, and comedian Megan Gogarty about her new one-woman show. It's called Feast. But first, there's still a little time left to get out and enjoy fall in Iowa. In a few minutes, travel writer Megan Bannister will be here to share some of her favorite beautiful and spooky fall destinations. But first, the bridges of Madison County draw tourists from all over the world, and they are at their most beautiful this time of year. And this year, visitors can do something they haven't been able to do for a long time. They can drive through a covered bridge. Cedar Bridge was burned by an arsonist in 2017, but the replica Cedar Bridge is now open and strong enough for vehicle traffic. Heather Riley is the executive director for the Madison County Chamber of Commerce. Hello, Heather.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And I think we all remember the news back in April of 2017 when Cedar Bridge was burned. And for people in Madison County, that must have also felt like deja vu because that was not the first time, right?
Right. I was not a resident of Madison County when it burnt the first time, but we moved here shortly after, and I do recall all of the signs wanting help and information finding the arsonist, and it just wasn't meant to be that time. This time, that process moved along a little quicker, but yeah, so we were all sad and sickened and wanted to have our covered bridge back.
Absolutely. That just must have been incredibly heartbreaking. So one of the big problems to getting that covered bridge back, though, was an insurance problem, right?
Right. The first time that we experienced an arson here, I think it was 2003 or thereabouts, there was insurance on that covered bridge and possibly all of them, but I know for sure since that was the situation, Cedar Bridge was covered at that time. And then after the rebuilding and everything was finished there in 2005, the rates for insuring Cedar Bridge just were more than this county could afford. And I think the conversation continued with county government and our board of supervisors about how do we do this. And then in the meantime, there were election cycles and new people on the board, new people in charge of the board, and eventually just fell off the radar. So now here we were in 2017. We are again in this situation, and there is not insurance to turn to. The good news is this time we were able to take advantage of a risk-sharing pool with other Iowa communities who have cultural treasures and historical iconic places, and we were able to be part of a risk-sharing pool, and it was affordable this time. So we learned something, but we had a resource available to us now that we did not have 15 years ago.
Well, that is excellent news. And tell me a little bit about the new Cedar Bridge, because, of course, this is a replica, but you had to make some pretty significant changes this time, right?
We did make some changes this time, although if you don't know any differently, don't kind of know the story, you'd look at Cedar Bridge and not have any idea that this, A, was a replica of a replica, and B, there are some significant structural changes in place this time just in case we have to go through this ever again. But, yeah, we decided, okay, so we need some help with funding this and did turn to our local citizens and guests to help us. And certainly the state of Iowa was very generous, but there were some questions about what are we going to do differently this time. And so that thought process needed to take place. And so those led to some good conversations. So what's probably the biggest change is that the bones of Cedar Bridge are now steel. So just in case this ever happens again, we have an arson and we got to start from scratch. We aren't really starting from scratch next time. It will not take another $720,000 because we'll have the bones, the steel structure in place. We'll just have to place the wooden planks on top of that.
Was the steel part of this decision to open it for vehicle traffic too?
Well, I think it made it affordable. I mean, I would say most of the donations that we received were contingent upon I'll donate if Cedar Bridge is once again a bridge that we can drive through. That was kind of a deal breaker for a lot of people. And
why
so
do you think that was
that
so important
to be
to
considered?
People? Yeah. Why do you think people wanted that so bad?
I think because that's the way it's been. I mean, Cedar Bridge for a long time has been the one that you can drive through. So to now have all of them where you cannot drive across, I mean, I think that was significant for people. So they just wanted back what they had, which was that you could drive through Cedar Bridge and get that experience of driving through.
What do you think makes these bridges so special?
Well, I guess it's because it's something you really don't see every day. And, I mean, they are kind of magnificent. And, I mean, beyond Cedar Ridge, our others are over 100 years old. And for me, I guess I'll speak for myself, it's kind of thrilling to look at them and think about the history, think about those people that drove through there with their wagons, with their tractors, with their, you know, 1930s, 40s cars, later in the 20th century, 1970s, 1980s, school buses going through there. So a lot of people have experienced them, and they are very special to our area. It's certainly not something you see every day, and they're stunning to look at, really, in any season of the year, but certainly in fall. They're just beautiful, and so now I feel like Mother Nature's finally blessed us with lots and lots of color now, and this is the best time to come and visit. And they're just special, and certainly having a place in history and in American culture with Oprah's visit, with the novel, the movie, and then the Broadway musical, I think makes them a special place to visit.
So if you visit New England, covered bridges are pretty popular, in at least throughout the history of New England. In Iowa, not nearly so much. Do we know why these bridges were built the way that they were originally?
Well, my understanding is that, I mean, if you go and look at our covered bridges, certainly, especially the ones who are 100 years old, the ones that are that were built in the 1880s, and look down, look at those enormous planks on the floor of those bridges. They're huge, and those were built before there was modern construction equipment. I mean, those were put up with pulleys and oxen, and those planks on the floor are huge, and they were expensive, and so the best way to take care of them was to cover them with sides and a roof. So that was much more cost-effective to replace a roof on a covered bridge versus the flooring. So if you go out and visit our covered bridges, look down and really take in the size of those beams on the floor and think about how they would have constructed those in the 1880s. It's pretty fascinating.
So you mentioned this time of year is just a gorgeous time of year to see the bridges. And this is your most popular travel season?
It is. Now, I would say we peak, well, probably the first part. Well, we're pretty busy all summer, and then things kind of slow down a little bit when school starts, but I would say that's when we have some older citizens come and visit us. They've kind of put off maybe traveling here until the end of the summer, but October is very, very busy. But once we get past Covered Bridge Festival and later into October, we see fewer and fewer visitors here, and then it's pretty quiet until things start up again in the springtime.
You do have some special winter reasons to come, though, right? What's coming up on the calendar?
We do. Yeah, we have a wonderful event here the Friday after Thanksgiving. It's our Festival of Lights Parade. And so we have a lot of really fun lighted Christmas displays that go around our courthouse square a couple of times to ring in the season. And then we've also started doing a live window night here in Winterset. If you visit our courthouse square, it is beautiful. We have a beautiful courthouse, lovely shops, enchanting boutiques and cafes, a newly renovated Iowa Theater that's a whole 100-year-old building, but it's been brought back to its original glory, and it's just fantastic. So if you come and see us and are here in the wintertime, you should come mid-December, because our merchants have started doing this lighted window night, and so they do live window displays in their windows, usually with a theme. So last year we had the 12 Days of Christmas, and so we took that Christmas carol, and the merchants took their own interpretation of that and did a display in their window that's live, that's lit, that incorporates their product or lots of Christmas twinkle lights, and it's really a fun evening.
The 25th anniversary of the release of the movie Bridges of Madison County is coming up next year. I guess you just had the 25th anniversary of the book release a couple of years ago. What do you have planned for the 25th anniversary of the movie?
Well, we're working on that. We want that to serve as our theme for Covered Bridge Festival next year, which will be year 51 for the festival, year 25 for the movie. And so we want to incorporate a lot of activities that will draw people here who loved the movie. And we get a lot of that when people walk in the door. They say that's one of their favorites. They identify with the character, or they're big Meryl Streep fans or Clint Eastwood fans. And so we want to incorporate some things into our festival next year, and have been working with the Iowa Film Office to really brainstorm what we could do, whether it's music, whether it's costuming from that time, characters. I mean, how do we want to bring that back to life during our Cover Bridge Festival next year? So we're working on a few things.
Now, before we leave, I have to ask you a question that I'm sure comes to a lot of people's minds. We talked about insurance and hoping that you never have to go through a loss of one of these bridges in the future. But you've also put some other safety measures in place in the bridges. What have you done to protect against arson?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, so we have insurance in place now. We also have surveillance on all of them. And then right now with Cedar Bridge, we have fire suppression units in there. And I would tell you, if you go there right now and look at them, they're kind of a funny color, and that was a miscommunication with the paint company in Washington who painted them for us. So those are moving out. Different ones are moving in, so we'll have those units put on a different site in the county. But, again, that kind of went back to the funding part. I would say the state of Iowa, while they were very generous, also kind of wanted to know what we were going to do differently this time. And so in addition to the steel structure or the steel bones, the insurance, having that fire suppression in there was probably very meaningful.
Right. Well, does that make the other bridges feel more vulnerable to you?
It does to me, yes. Yes, it does.
All right. So.
And, you know, and I would say now that it's kind of on everyone's radar again, here's our checklist. We've fortified Cedar Bridge. We have added the insurance. We've added the surveillance. I would say that fire suppression in the whole scheme of things was not that expensive. So I can see our county government wanting to put that additional piece of insurance in place and make sure those are on all of them, because that would be a crying shame if our 100-plus-year-old bridge went up in flames.
Absolutely. Well, I'm glad
all to have one with 20-year-old wood, but, you know, one with 100-year-old wood would really be devastating.
Right. I'm glad all of your bridges are back in place. Congratulations, Heather. Thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
Heather Riley is the executive director for the Madison County Chamber of Commerce. We've been talking about the newly rebuilt, reopened, rededicated Cedar Bridge in Madison County. And coming up in just a moment, we'll talk about some beautiful and spooky fall travel destinations in Iowa, including a spooky destination in Madison County. And then a little later on in the hour, I'll talk with playwright, actress, and comedian Megan Gogarty about her new one-woman show. It's called Feast. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We've got a beautiful weekend ahead of us, and with fall color at its peak, it is the perfect time to get out and explore in Iowa. Halloween is also just around the corner, so it's a great time to combine some leaf peeping with some more spooky adventures, and travel writer Megan Bannister has some great suggestions. She is a travel writer based in Des Moines and blogs at oleoiniowa.com. Megan, welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much for having me back.
Well, thank you very much for being back. And all right, we're going to talk about some spooky Iowa destinations. So we have to suspend some disbelief here and open our minds to some possibilities that we may not accept on a day-to-day basis. But let's start in Madison County, because we were just talking about the bridges of Madison County. But one of those bridges is also haunted.
Yeah, so that's the story. So the Roseman-covered bridge, talking about the Bridges of Madison County movie, the one that's featured in the film, is rumored to be haunted. And I guess in 1892, there were sheriffs that had cornered a jail escapee from the county jail in Winterset on the bridge. And it's rumored that he levitated into the air and let out a ghostly shriek and then disappeared, and no one could find him again. So that's how the legend goes, and people report feeling cold spots, which I think is a pretty common ghost thing, and then just kind of feeling eerie, especially in that middle part of the bridge where he's said to have disappeared.
Are you supposed to go at a certain time? I assume in the dark is best,
yes,
right?
Yes, probably in the dark. If you're like me and you're a little bit of a chicken, you only go to any of these places during the day. but yeah, not that I could find that there is a certain time, but yeah, nighttime especially.
All right, so that's in Winterset, of course, the Roseman-covered bridge. Legend has it that it's haunted. The Black Angel of Iowa City is a legend that people in eastern Iowa love to share with each other. Tell me a little bit about the Black Angel.
Yeah, so in Oakland Cemetery in Iowa City, there's a probably 8.5, 9-foot tall statue of a Black Angel that was actually I believe, originally bronze and has since kind of oxidized and turned that creepy, eerie green-black color that was put up in the early 1900s as a grave marker for a Czech woman's son who had passed away. And so she is rumored to be buried there, and so is her second husband. And the legend goes that if you, I think, kiss the statue or kiss in front of the statue at midnight on Halloween, you're rumored to die within 7 years. And then there's also a version that I've heard from some friends that anyone who kisses the actual statue will be killed instantly. So maybe a risky Halloween trip.
It's a very cool statue.
It is a very cool statue. It's huge.
And I think a beautiful tribute. Great for a walk.
Yes,
but people do like to amp these things up, don't they?
Yes, absolutely.
And I'm just going to go ahead and say no scientific evidence that you die if you interact with the
unproven.
Black Angel at all.
Unproven. No reported cases of anyone dropping dead.
All right. All those urban legends, you can put them to rest.
Yes.
All right. One of, I think, probably the most popular spooky destinations in Iowa is in Villisca, Iowa. Tell us about the Axe Murder House.
Yes. So in June of 1912, and this is actually probably one of Iowa's most infamous cold cases. There were 8 people, including 6 children who were all under the age of 12, who were killed in their sleep in this tiny town of Villisca, which was probably roughly the same size as it is today at the time. And they had gone to, I believe, a church program as a family and invited 2 neighbors' daughters to stay overnight with them. And then the next morning, the neighbors of the Moore family noticed that they hadn't come outside. They hadn't done any of their farm chores. And so they went around town and got a key and let themselves in and found that the 2 parents and their daughters and the visiting neighbors had been killed in their sleep. And it was never solved. To this day, they still aren't entirely sure, especially since this was, you know, early 1900s. Fingerprinting was a kind of new thing, so they definitely didn't have DNA testing and any of that sort of technology that we rely on today. And there is, if you're interested in reading more about this one, a really great book called The Man from the Train by Bill James, kind of looking into what possibly might have happened. And he actually does find a serial killer who was active in and around the Midwest around this time, who he thinks might have been responsible. But as far as like an official person who committed this crime, it's still unsolved.
It's such a horrific crime. And I know a lot of people in the area have some real mixed emotions about the fact that it's become such a big tourist destination. But it is a tourist attraction. I mean, the house has been restored to the status that it was in 1912.
Yes. Yeah. I don't believe any of the things like the furniture and those sorts of things in the house are the original, because it had been renovated over the years and then purchased and turned back into what it would have looked like at the time. But you can pay to stay overnight in the house. You can do like a daytime visit too and just walk through, but then you can also pay to stay overnight and do any sort of paranormal investigation or photos or anything like that that you might want. So, and I think the last time we visited there, they said it's booked up almost every night of the year.
Wow. So, all right, that's the Villisca Axe Murder House, which is one a lot of people have heard about. Mm-hmm. Tell me about the Mason House Inn. This is one I had not heard about.
Yeah, so the Mason House Inn is in Bentonsport, which is down in southeast Iowa, really cute little river town. And it is a historic inn from the mid-1840s that is haunted by mostly friendly ghosts, it sounds like. So the couple who purchased the inn learned after they bought it that 3 of the former owners had died there, and then there had also been a guest murdered in the inn. But from the reports that their guests give, they're mostly, it seems like, friendly ghosts. So there's one rumored to be, they think, a little boy who likes to play pranks on people, knock on doors, and then when you open the door to your room, there's no one there, tugs on sleeves, that kind of thing. And then the owner who actually passed away in the inn, or one of them, was the last Mason to own the property, so the name of the inn. And they said that she, people hear someone welcome them or feel just kind of a presence. And that's kind of a fun thing. They think she just, is still there taking care of people who visit their inn.
All right. And they obviously capitalize on.
Yes. Yeah, this. For sure. They have I think they still do some paranormal investigating events. You can go. And I know they've had people who have been like, I'm good. I'll find somewhere else. But yeah, they if you're into kind of a haunted experience that maybe isn't a total scary story, then this one might be for you.
All right. And I think every college campus in Iowa, probably every college campus everywhere, has some sort of ghost story.
Oh, for sure.
But you have one from the center of Des Moines. Tell me about this one.
Yeah. So this is one I actually learned during my time at Drake. So the observatory, if you take an astronomy class at Drake, is actually located on one of the city golf courses. And so it's a little bit further west of campus, but there's a local observatory that you can go to. They have some open community nights, so members of the community can use it as well. But the ghost of Dr. Robert Morehouse, who was the first chairman of the astronomy and physics department at Drake, is said to haunt the observatory, which I was skeptical of, but would make sense because he and his wife are actually interned in the entryway wall. So that was where they requested to be buried. And this did not happen to me during my time there, but students had reported feeling like they were being watched and noticed that someone had corrected some of their observations or things on their homework after they had left.
So a helpful homework assistant.
Yes.
Ghost.
I know. We could have more of those. It would be great.
All right. That's the Drake Municipal Observatory, rumored to be haunted. And as I mentioned, I do think that there has to be at least one legendary ghost on every college campus.
Oh, absolutely.
Everywhere. I'm talking with Megan Bannister. She is a travel writer based in Des Moines. She blogs at olioiniowa.com. And we're talking about some spooky travel destinations in Iowa. And next, you want to take us to Scotch Grove. Tell me about this one.
Yes. So in talking to people about kind of haunted destinations, this was one of the ones that came up over and over. So the Edinburgh Manor in Scotch Grove, back in the 1800s, was a poor farm where people who maybe were wards of the state would work. And obviously those were not ideal farming conditions. So there had been lots of accidental deaths, that sort of thing there. And then the farm was closed and they built the current manor building, and it was used as a home for people with mental illness, people with disabilities, and is reported to be very haunted. The Travel Channel, I think, has been there, and it's a site that people, if you're going to go do, you know, the EKG readings you see on TV and that kinds of things, is really popular. And that one sounds like maybe has some less friendly ghosts. So one that I kind of heard about over and over was one that people call the Joker, that kind of is famous for throwing things and making people feel like they're being choked and that sort of thing. So if you're into more of a scary ghost experience, this one is probably for you. I have not been there because I, like I said, I'm a little bit of a chicken.
All right. I'm a non-believer, so it sounds all right to me.
There you go.
Let's talk about the Hotel Black Hawk in Davenport. And there does seem to be a trend here on places where you can go and stay. People get excited about the possibility of interacting with ghosts. So tell me about the Hotel Black Hawk.
Yes. Yeah, it is convenient that it's lots of hotels and people you can places you can spend the night. So the Hotel Black Hawk in Davenport was renovated, I think, pretty recently in probably the last 5 to 10 years. And it's a historic hotel, which, again, a lot of the haunted places seem to be those kind of iconic historic buildings. And Cary Grant actually was staying in the hotel when he passed away. And I don't believe actually passed away in the hotel, but had a heart attack there and died in a hospital nearby and is rumored to be seen around the property. So if you're looking for a famous ghost sighting, that one might be your spot.
Okay, so celebrity ghosts,
yes,
possible at Hotel Black Hawk in Davenport. I'm a huge Cary Grant fan, so another bridge on the list. Bridges seem to be particularly haunted. We've got two more bridges on the list. Tell me about Matzel Bridge.
Yeah, so this one is in Viola or near Viola. And this is another kind of local legend. Friends who grew up around there were like, oh, yeah, we always talked about that, that if you drive onto the Matzel Bridge at night and put your car in neutral, that your car will be pushed across to the other side. And some people have reported afterwards seeing handprint on their bumpers, that sort of thing. And then I also heard from some people, and whether this is just a cautionary tale so that people stop putting their car in neutral on a bridge near their town,
right,
who's to say, but the ghost can be easily angered. So if you're going to do this, you also might run the risk of having your windows broken or your car try to be pushed off the bridge.
And do we know what makes the ghost angry?
No, not that I was able to find from anyone.
All right. So watch yourself.
Yes.
All right. Matzel Bridge near Viola. Let's go to Dubuque next.
Yeah, so the Ham House, another, again, historic house. This one's been turned into a museum, and it's a house from the early 1830s that was a family of seven that lived there. And over the years, you know, as happened, several people died in the home. They think this one is another kind of friendly ghost or just sort of mischievous ghost scenario where people will feel cold, kind of feel a random breeze blow through when none of the windows are open. And then there's also a organ in the home that belonged to the family that is inoperable, doesn't work, but every once in a while people hear organ music from somewhere in the house. So kind of a fun museum experience.
Yep. And then the final spooky destination on your list is yet another bridge, or at least it used to be a bridge. Tell me about Lover's Leap in Columbus Junction.
Yeah, so this bridge is still there. You can go. It's a big swinging bridge. If you don't like heights, I don't recommend it. But the original bridge is very cool. Yes, it is very cool. The original bridge that was there collapsed in the 1920s, and there were two people on it at the time, though neither of them were injured. But there is a local legend around the bridge that if you're there at night, you can hear the sounds of either crying or screaming of either the people falling, or there's also a legend that there was a heartbroken Native American woman who jumped off the cliff to her death after her lover had died in battle. And she's said to be buried at the bottom of the canyon there. But I was not able to totally corroborate that.
Can't fact check that one.
But again, a local legend. It's on kind of their sign when you go. So.
All right. Well, and the swinging bridge in Columbus Junction, again, with fall foliage, is just a great destination. And we had a caller who wanted to know your thoughts on which of these Iowa ghost stories you think would make the best movie. Maybe she's got a screenplay in the works.
I feel like a movie, I would like to see a Villisca movie. And I know there's been some documentaries, but I think that would be just a really interesting story, even if it was more of a like detective-y type looking for the killer. I love true crime, so I think that would be a really fun one. I think for a while there was supposed to be an indie movie about the Black Angel in Iowa City, and I don't know if that one ever came out, but I feel like that could be a really good just like true scary story movie.
All right. Now, if you are just looking for leaves and not ghosts,
yes,
you have some recommendations for some great drives this time of year. And you really have to do it this weekend because leaves are at their peak and it's supposed to be gorgeous this weekend, right?
Yes, it's supposed to be beautiful before it gets too cold and everything falls off and turns brown. The Glacial Trail Scenic Byway is a little drive I discovered a few years ago. And it's very scenic up in northwest Iowa, but it's just a 36-mile loop. And especially this time of year, the leaves are gorgeous. It's got some great rolling hills. And there's just some really fun outdoors places to be there. So there's a Prairie Heritage Center that actually has bison on site, and you can go and learn all about the landscape and the area around. And then if you're looking for a fun place to stay overnight, that one has nearby Dog Creek. There are cabins that are actually made out of grain bins. And so I think they sleep like 8 to 10, but you can stay overnight in a grain bin.
Oh, cool.
Out in some scenic overlooks, and then, yeah, do some driving
Very
around.
Very cool. All right. Of course, everybody loves the Driftless area, but that's also a great place to go this time of year.
It is, yeah. So right now would be an absolutely great time to do a scenic byway tour in northeast Iowa. That one is a little bit longer, so if you're doing, a weekend getaway, there's some great orchards. Empty Nest Winery is up there, and then just some really fun local shops and things like that to pop into on your way up and down that side of the state.
All right. Ledges State Park, one of my favorite state parks, also makes your list. Tell me what you like to do there this time of year.
Yeah, Ledges is on my list of favorites, too. It's a real easy drive from Des Moines or from Ames. And especially this time of year, the color is beautiful. And there's so many great trails to either hike up onto the bluffs to get a great view from above. I think the kind of lower road had been closed for some flooding, but just
as usual,
less easy to drive through flooding. But yeah, and if you're in the area and looking for other things, Alluvial Brewing is up there, and grab a great beer and Great Plains Pizza. So if you need some good pizza to fortify your hike, but a fun fall afternoon for sure. And Grove Orchard is there as well, if you're willing to battle some crowds and pick some apples.
All right, we've got 30 seconds left, but we can also take the best drive in America, right?
Yes, absolutely. So that one is the Great River Road down the Mississippi River. And so you can hit a lot of really great Iowa icons and seeing some fall colors. So the Effigy Mounds National Historic Monument, the Fenelon Place Elevator in Dubuque, which is a really fun ride this time of year, especially with all of the leaves changing. And then just some really fun shops to stop at it along the way.
All right. A great weekend to get out and explore. Megan Bannister, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Megan Bannister is a travel writer based in Des Moines. She blogs at oleoiniowa.com. Coming up in just a moment, I'll talk with playwright, actress, and comedian Megan Gogarty about her new one-woman show. This is Talk of Iowa.